So welcome to the fourth edition of the Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift, along with Rafat Ali, founder of Paid Content and the founder of possibly two stealth startups.
Hi, Mark. How are you? Thank you for letting the world know that I'm working on two startups.
Did I just ruin the entire thing?
You just ruined the entire thing. Now I got to think two new ideas to change that. Never mind.
So happy Passover.
To you too.
Yeah, and happy, I guess, Easter is coming up on Sunday. It's always exciting.
Yeah. They're, I guess, Jewish and Christian holidays are taken care of. There are no Muslim holidays that I know of.
Okay.
But usually, it's actually been quite interesting where the last couple of years, a lot of the major Jewish, Christian, and Muslim holidays are coinciding for the last 2 years. So it's kind of interesting.
Because usually with lunar calendars, it just things tend to be different.
Yeah. I don't know enough about it, but it just seemed like a nice coincidence to happen.
Yeah. I guess for everyone's background, I'm Jewish. Rafat is Muslim. Rafat is in New York. I'm in San Francisco. So we have both coasts covered.
Yes, that's true. We fly over the flyover country.
Yeah, well, we'll bring in guests from flyover country so that we make sure to cover the heartland as well.
That's true.
And I mean, you went to Indiana University. I went to Missouri University. I grew up in Missouri, so.
Yeah, we do have some Midwestern creds.
Today's show is largely about Apple. I'll just give a quick rundown of what we'll be talking about. Apple had some incredible earnings report, especially with iPhone sales leading the way. The dark cloud over Apple, or maybe a very small dark cloud, is some research that came out showing that the Apple iPhones and iPads are actually tracking people without them knowing about it and sending that information to Apple. No one really knows what's being done with that information. We're going to also have guest Neil Augenstein from WTOP Radio, who is a radio reporter who has given up all of his other equipment to do his reporting completely on an iPhone 4, which is pretty amazing. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the new personalized news sites and apps. News.me is one of them that's from Bitly and New York Times, and the other is Trove from the Washington Post, and just do a quick look at those. And also Flipboard got some massive funding. So let's start with Apple earnings. They had just amazing earnings recently for the second quarter. Their sales were record sales of $24.6 billion, up 83% year over year. Their profits were nearly $6 billion, up almost 100%. Just incredible. Their iPhone sales were 18.65 million units, up 113%, and their iPhone sales were up 250% in China. It's just an incredible quarter for them.
Yeah, and tech journalists had a hard time yesterday coming up with headlines and superlatives and Apple puns and all that kind of stuff. So yes, it's been an crazy quarter for them, which I think a lot of people were just blown away by.
Yeah, I mean, you try to look at and think about, well, what are some of the possible weaknesses? You know, what could go wrong for them? You know, Steve Jobs has had some health issues. They're saying he's still involved and still showing up at the company and involved in a lot of the things that are happening there. What else do you see as possible weakness? iPad, I guess the iPads are having issues with parts.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I guess the weakness is kind of what, when you go into an interview and they ask you, what's your weakness? And then you say, oh, I'm too sincere. And like, it's kind of one of those where their problems are completely the opposite of the rest of the market, which is they can't make enough to satiate the demand. And you can see how China and other places are just getting started. and the official sales in China are going gangbusters, and the unofficial is probably even bigger than that, stuff that gets pirated or I guess bought in US and other places and then sold at a premium in China. So I think the only weakness at this point is how they can keep up on iPad. And then iPod, which is sort of writing on the wall that that it's down light, it's down slightly, and I think that they will have to sort of figure out how to way to manage the decline curve, because it's just music players are just going to become a part of phones and iPads and everything else.
Yeah, and that's one thing that's just kind of sunsetting slowly. Although still, you know, sales of 9 million units of iPod is still, that's still something. And what about the Macs, too? I mean, no one really even thinks about the Mac. Just the computers themselves, the sales were up 28%, which is incredible in a PC market that's, what, down 3% broadly.
Yeah, I think what's I think it's primarily laptops, of course, not desktops. And desktops continue to sort of slump as the world moves away from the desktop. But I think just their strong lineup of Macs and Mac Air, the new version of it, is selling quite strongly as well, from what I understand. So, yeah, and people will still acquire laptops for some time to come, at least anybody who works in business, really.
It just seems like at the moment they can do very little wrong. You know, I mean, they literally brought the whole market up yesterday in a way.
Yeah, and you, of course, you contributed in a small way with your Verizon move, and how's it going? Third week or something?
Yeah, I mean, the whole Passover story of freedom, you know, really rang true for me, and freedom from AT&T, you know, I'm loving it. You know, I met up with some friends last night, and they're all still AT&T iPhone, and I was Verizon iPhone, and they were, you know, watching how I could get signals where they couldn't, and you know, they were definitely jealous, and I'm sure when their contracts come up, they're going to have to consider it. A couple of researchers, Alistair Allen and Pete Warden, were at the WEAR conference, the O'Reilly conference, and just said, oh, we want to really map some data. And so we decided we wanted to map this data that we found on this file called consolidated.db that's on iPhones and iPads. They say they've been on there since last June on the iOS 4 system. And they mapped basically where they'd been and what all their movements had been since last June on a map. And I think and created an actual app called iPhone Finder, where anybody with an iPhone can download that app and map their movements. And, you know, soon after, of course, people were up in arms about, you know, there's this secret file that anybody, you know, everyone has, no one knew about. Already Al Franken, the senator, has said, you know, he's going to look into it. You know, you've got lawmakers upset about it. Privacy advocates, I'm sure, will not be far behind. I mean, how do you feel about that? You know, having an iPhone just, I mean, you know that the cell, but I haven't seen anything about the cell carriers. Everyone knows the cell carriers know, they know where you're at.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess the only ones not worried are the people who check into Foursquare every 5 seconds. So their movements are already taken care of, unless they're doing fake check-ins, you know, how that works. I think it's more of an oversight than anything else. It seems like it from what I've been reading. It will probably be shut down pretty quickly. There are already ways to shut it down. If you sync your phone to your to iTunes, there's some setting there apparently that you can click, and the file will be encrypted. So even if somebody gets a hold of it, right now nobody has access to the file. It's just sort of a solitary thing that's sitting on your phone. So I guess I'm a little bit concerned, but not enough to be as worried as some of the stuff that Facebook does.
Yeah, people were even saying this is kind of Facebook's a Facebook moment, for Apple. And the New York Post, of course, had fun with it with a headline saying, "I stalk," and how if other people got a hold of this file, what could happen? And it's always hard to tell initially when you hear things like this. Is it something that's just typical in a lot of devices that just have all this data and collect all this data, or is it something, is it, how much do you worry about it? How much is that just the world that we live in?
Yeah, and I mean, Wall Street Journal did this series called "What They Know," which I'm sure you know about. Which
Right.
did it win the Pulitzer? Or did it not win the Pulitzer?
I don't think it won a Pulitzer, but it got a lot of attention.
It got a lot of attention. I think they were apparently in line to win it. I guess they didn't win it. But this was a series done by Wall Street Journal over, I think, over a year or something. A giant series about what kind of, like, privacy and what kind of stuff do apps track, or online advertising, or behavioral, every all kinds of stuff, and what kind of things they track. So I would imagine that and this does not even compare anywhere to all the stuff that series recorded.
Yeah, and that report, I thought it was excellent. They took a little bit of criticism for that report because they were saying it was a little bit scaremongering, that there were a lot of things in there that might not be as consequential. But I think the overall idea is that people don't have a clear idea of where all the data is being stored and who knows what about, your movements online, and just how many different people along the chain know what you've done, where you've been, who you've talked to, what you said. Even in just something simple as instant messaging, you think about all the different people along the chain that know what those instant messages are, not only the person who got it, but the service provider, this and that, the ISP. There's just so many people along the way that can capture that information.
Yeah, I mean, it is scary if you think about it, but I don't know how many consumers beyond a certain point care. And that's, I guess, is it a function of the fact that it's difficult to understand to begin with, or is it a function of the fact that people just don't care?
Let's bring in Neil. Neil Augenstein, he's a reporter for WTOP-FM and WTOP.com, all news station in Washington, D.C. Before he became a reporter, he was a talk show producer and musician. In his 14 years with WTOP, he's covered everything from September 11th to the Beltway snipers. And in February 2010, Neil became the first major market radio reporter in the country to put away his traditional broadcast gear, begin doing all his field reporting on an iPhone only. Welcome, Neil.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. So tell us, what was this like? Was this like some kind of dare or something to do this, to make the move to completely use your iPhone? Or did someone just say, "I'll bet you'll never be able to do this"? How did it happen?
It was something that I'd been thinking about. The ability to do everything from one device was something that I'd been hoping to accomplish. In years past, I would be carrying a laptop and microphones and cables and a still camera and a video camera. I was doing a lot of time just waiting around, mostly waiting for the laptop to boot up. So after I'd interviewed someone in the field, I would have to boot up the laptop. That would take a couple minutes. Then I'd have to dub the raw audio from my cassette or mini disc or eventually digital recorder to the laptop. After I'd found and untangled all the cords I would need to make that happen, then I could go ahead producing a report on the laptop and emailing it back to the newsroom. Now, the iPhone with a good audio editing app, I was finally able to do the interview, pull the cuts, edit them, write my script, record my track, edit it all together, and email it to the newsroom all from just one device. And what used to take me 30 minutes to do now takes 10 minutes. And of course, that's just the audio. Now, with mobile journalism, there are lots of other demands. I'm also able to send pictures, I'm able to send video, I'm able to edit both of those out in the field and deliver to the newsroom a finished product that can be easily integrated into our on-air as well as our WTLP.com website and our social media stuff.
Wow. So that if you're able to do, turn around in 10 minutes, that means what? You're going to have to do more reports per day? They'll just work you a little harder?
Well, that's true. I do always have my studio with me, and you know, I don't think it's ever been verbalized, but it does give me more of an excuse to always be on the clock, because if I witness something happening, I can capture it. I don't think my bosses expect me to work around the clock, but if I happen to be someplace where a big fire, I'm sure I would take pictures and video and do an interview there and transmit it back to the newsroom so someone would be able to make use of the material that I gathered.
Nicholas Ruffeth, just to be clear, you're doing the whole process on your phone, not syncing it to the laptop or editing it there. You're just doing it everything on the iPhone, right?
That's correct. Using the application that I use is something called VC Audio Pro. It's made by a company called Vericorder from Canada, and they've been very involved in lots of different mobile journalism products. And what I have in front of me on my iPhone is a 3-track multi-track recorder that allows me to pull cuts, it allows me to delete, it allows me to do everything that I could do on a desktop audio editing software I can do on the phone. Now, granted, it's not as easy to do on the tiny screen. There are some limitations in that there's only limited audio processing that I might be able to, I could sort of finish off the product a little bit better if I were in the newsroom. But on the other hand, being able to gather information and put it together into a good piece and transmit it back into the newsroom in a short period of time is a pretty good reason to use it. I will say that there are some disadvantages to using the iPhone. The sound quality, right now I'm using the built-in microphone for the iPhone, and that's because there's not a good compatible microphone that works with the iPhone 4. There used to be a product called Blue Mikey. In fact, there still is a product called Blue Mikey, but it's not compatible with the iPhone 4. So when I used to use the 3GS, I was able to use that microphone and get a slightly better sound than from the built-in mic. I estimate that the sound quality is 92%. As good as if I were using my own microphone and my own good recorder. 92%, you lose a little bit of it, but usually when I do a report, people, when they hear that it was done on an iPhone, they say, I had no idea. It sounds just like all the other reports on the station, which is, of course, what I'm aiming for.
What do your sources, how do your sources react when you're interviewing someone or gathering information at the scene? I mean, do they think of you as being a reporter? Do they think of you as just being some guy with a phone taking pictures and stuff?
Interesting question. I do usually wear my credentials around my neck. I think my boss would be happy if there was a windscreen or some sort of thing that could say WTOP right on the phone. We haven't gotten that yet. There are a lot of products that there still is a market for iPhone reporters. There's not a good way to attach an iPhone to a podium. I've had to put together some ways of doing that. There's also not a good windscreen for the iPhone, so I've had to sort of put things together to work around that. I think that thankfully, at least the people around here, they knew me when I was carrying a big cassette recorder and a microphone with a WTLP mic flag on it. Nowadays, I show my credentials and I say that we're doing something new here and this will help them sound even better and get them on the air faster. And they seem to be satisfied with that.
What's the reaction been to to what you're doing in your newsroom. You just told about reaction, I guess, to the people you interview. But what's the reaction internally?
Well, my bosses have been very supportive in this. When I decided that I wanted to see how far the iPhone reporting could go, they realized that it would take me for a while to get up to speed and to sort of figure out the way to do it best. There really isn't a best practices manual that I can refer to. What's sort of exciting about it is I sort of feel like we're making it up as we go along.
Maybe you can write the best practices manual.
I guess so. And actually, some of the stuff that I've done with you folks has helped to memorialize at least where we are right now in the digital recording and digital journalism field. As far as my coworkers, I think that they're a lot of them say, well, when do I get my iPhone? And I'm sure that will be in the works. The other reporters in town, I think that they're all doing their own thing. They notice that they know that I'm doing that. They wonder if I'm getting compensated from Apple. The answer is no, I'm not. I can't even get Apple's attention, but you know, I know I'm not alone in that. You know, I think that people, at least the competition out there, realizes that I have a new tool. I don't know whether they feel threatened by it. I know that some of the more tech savvy people are trying to get on board with it, and I sort of welcome them. It's nice to have some company sometimes.
Do you think it's easier to do? I mean, it's almost counterintuitive, but it's easier to do live broadcasting from iPhone, either audio or video, than it is to send edited pieces, I suppose, right?
No, well, that's the one drawback. Right now, there is not a very good way to do live broadcasting. At least that's been my experience. There are some apps that would allow me to connect the iPhone to our units back in the newsroom. That if they worked as they should, would provide very good quality. Almost studio quality. I personally have not been able to make that happen yet. The unreliability of the connections, the unreliability of getting getting the iPhone to connect to the unit back in the newsroom has made it so that I'm not doing much live reporting on the iPhone. I generally will pre-record a piece and email it to the newsroom a few minutes before my story airs, with using Skype. We're doing with Skype, we're getting some pretty good results in the field. And I think that eventually we'll be doing some live reporting with that. There are some workarounds that have to be done in order to make that happen in our newsroom. But I think that that's where we'll be going relatively soon. And I trust that the applications will improve in the next few years, and that I will, in fact, be doing more live reporting from my iPhone.
Did you, Neil, shed a tear for the flip camera? Did you ever use that, or did you ever think that that was going to be something that you would be using?
You know, that's a great point. I thought that the flip camera was great. I was hoping that eventually you'd be able to transmit from it. I did think that the sound quality of the audio. Okay, but when you shoot video, one of the most important things, which is often overlooked, is the audio that accompanies it. I am not very happy with using the iPhone because the microphone of the iPhone points in the wrong direction. And I think that the iPhone video and audio will continue to improve. And I think that eventually the flip will be sort of considered along with with some of the early palms, and they'll be sort of a stepping stone to where we are today.
Well, thanks a lot, Neil. Really appreciate you coming on to MediaTwits.
I've enjoyed it. I enjoyed the questions. I've enjoyed reading your stuff online, and look forward to talking again.
Yeah, take care.
All right, thanks, Neil.
Thanks, guys.
So the last thing we're going to talk about is personalized news sites and apps, and the recent launch this week of a site called Trove that the Washington Post put together, and also a site called news.me that from Bitly and the New York Times worked on that as well. I'm just curious. I've taken a look at both of them, and let's see, I'll tell you what happened, because I signed up for News.me, and that one connects to your Twitter feed and basically will recommend a bunch of stories based on who you follow on Twitter. And today it sent me an email. The top story was about Tim Hetherington, being the photographer and movie director, got killed in Libya. There's something about the Knight Foundation and FCC joining forces. It looks pretty, I mean, it's pretty good. It's pretty well targeted to my interests. Trove, on the other hand, seems a little bit more broad. It's hard to get it. They have all these channels, and that one's based on your Facebook and where you've been on Facebook, what you like, what, you know, the pages that you like, the stories that you like. And that one seems a little bit more detailed, maybe not quite as targeted. Have you played around with these at all?
Yeah, both actually, because News.me I've been playing for a while because I was part of the closed alpha or something like whatever it was at that time for about a month and a half, 2 months now.
Yeah.
And I actually haven't downloaded the official version of it, which I should. So I go to it once in a – I mean I go to it every few days. It takes Twitter – it takes data from Bitly, which is – so this has been incubated out of – BetaWorks, which incubated Bitly. It is pretty interesting. I like the top headlines that it sends, which is a global headlines, which it uses Bitly data on what are the top stories, news stories, and I think it probably extrapolates with you, with what you're following and your interests are and who you're following. So I have been using it for about 2 months, and I like the top headlines part of it. I like some of the functionality of how stories expand with the – you can sort of pinch the stories to expand them and read the whole stories in the app, as opposed to something like Flipboard, where if you don't have a deal with them, then you have to then jump to the website for it. So I like some of those functions. I don't know if I'm reading my Twitter already on a daily basis as part of my work. Would News.me be that useful to me? So I think that's the question that I would have.
Right. That is it going to be a Twitter replacement or an enhancement, right?
Yeah. And then Trove, which I think you've played with as well, uses Facebook. And interestingly, Washington Post, it's owned by Washington Post, and Don Graham is on the board of Facebook as well. So there are a lot of sort of close connections there. I don't know. I mean, I played with the website. I think if they will, as they've said, they need to come out. They're going to come out with iPad and iPhone apps soon. And I think that would be the primary testing ground for somebody like me instead of the website.
Right. And News.me is going to be charging
something. It says, yeah, 99 cents
a week or $35 a year. So I guess it's going to have to be something pretty special to get people to start paying for it, right?
Yeah, and they're using the Apple subscription, so at least they're making it easy. If nothing else, they're giving up a chunk of that 99 cents up to Apple, but they're betting that they'll make it up en masse. There's going to be tons. They're already, as you know, and I think you've played with them, a bunch of apps that already do a lot of this kind of stuff. Pulse is one, Zeit, which got slapped on the wrist by some of the publishers. Flipboard, of course, which raised a giant amount of money. Apparently, Google is
$50 million for Flipboard.
$50 million, which is, I think, the highest ever for just an app.
That has no revenues, right?
That has no revenue. So I jokingly said the other day that $40 million for that color app, $41 million for that color app, $50 million for Flipboard. Who's going to raise $100 million for an app now? So hopefully soon somebody will raise $100 million for it. So, and then Flipboard, I think, alluded to the fact that Google is coming up with a, I don't know, Flipboard killer, but that sort of seems like an overkill.
Well, I hope whatever your stealth startups are, that they do involve an app and social media of some sort.
Yeah, but it's not going to be about personalized, curated news. That much I can tell you. So,
yeah, I mean, this seems like a space that a lot of people have tried things in, and you know, people, and maybe there were, you know, even if you go back to things like NetVibes and all the RSS feeds and news readers, and there have been so many people who've come to this space, but no one really has found, it seems like, much of a business model around it.
Yeah, not really. I mean, you're exactly right about like the RSS readers who made any money out of it, except I guess a few that exited, like one or two that exited at the right time.
Right. Yeah.
And I just it feels like this will be a domain of a lot of sort of small startups that do a lot of interesting things, but not necessarily revenue generators.
Thanks for tuning in for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer with Rafat Ali. Thanks to special guest Neil Augenstein from WTOP. And remember to check out MediaShift on pbs.org/MediaShift and our sister site IdeaLab at pbs.org/IdeaLab. We'll catch you next week.